Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. All of us go through bumps and grinds in life. Sometimes the grinds are absolutely horrific. The bumps, we might be able to survive them with a few bruises, emotionally, mentally, physically, or spiritually. But I have a lady with me today that has put together a book called A Mosaic Heart, Reshaping the Shards of a Shattered Life. Her name is Terry Jones Brady, and this is a woman that's walked a walk I don't think any of us would want to go through. Maybe some of you have even gone through the equivalent, or maybe worse. But what Terry is going to be talking about today, and what we're going to be sharing, is how, even out of the depths of despair, a resiliency, a determination, and a will to live can make all the difference in the world. Terry, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you're a woman that's had sort of an eclectic life as far as education goes. You've been involved in the education system. You've been involved in the acting. You are a wife. You're a mom. But your life started out with some very interesting patterning, especially when it came to your family. Terry, usually when someone writes a book like yours, A Mosaic Heart, it is something that is very tough because when they're writing it, they're having to relive some things that many times people would just as soon close the door on and want to run away from. When you were putting this book together about your experiences in your life, did you have that feeling? Did you sometimes, when you were writing, wonder, should I even talk about this?
Occasionally I did, because thinking back on it, the horror is so great. And I realized from time to time that if I were standing on the outside of myself looking in at my life, I would wonder why this woman, that is me, is not just curled up in the fetal position waiting to die. Mm-hmm. Because of the terrible experiences that I had had, and the experiences that I had are all involved the deaths of my closest family. I lost my two daughters, and then my husband committed suicide. And I thought, why in the world am I taking myself back to that? And a friend of mine asked me once if it was a catharsis to write it. And I began to think about that. And I think the answer, ironically, is no, it wasn't a catharsis. It was a need to reach out to other people. There's so much heartbreak in the world. I would certainly hope, as you said in your introductory remarks, that no one would ever have to go through the experiences that I've gone through, but I know that people have, and mm-hmm. worse, mm-hmm. Certainly worse. But we do not have to, we can accept the events of our lives as not death-inducing catastrophes, but as opportunities for growth. And because I had done so much grieving and worked through my grief and come out whole or, well, scarred, but put back together, I think, which is why I subtitled my book what I did, I just wanted to convey to my readers that you can go through tragedies, but you have a life beyond the tragedy. You have to live through it. You have to experience it fully, acknowledge it, grieve, live through it, and there's another life waiting for you because that happened to me. Mm-hmm. And I think that I stand as as proof that the human being has that resiliency. We have that resiliency because we are spiritual beings. We are our journey on this earth is moving closer and closer to the divine, and when we recognize that our life on earth, as precious as it is a segment of our total life, then I think we can accept the tragedy, move through it, grieve as human beings, and come out, well, a cliche, better, not bitter, on the other side.
I agree. Now, I'm going to quote something from your book. It's right at the beginning of your book. You said, at some point in your life, you learned not to make into catastrophes events that comprise living the life one is given. And I think that those are very, very strong words and very, very powerful words. Now, let's go into a little bit of your background again. We're going back into a time when you were an actress and you just were having a great deal of fun. You were in plays. You were in the Utah Shakespearean Festival. You had just a lot of fun. You were called a wink girl, which I thought, boy, what a title to give someone, a wink girl. And there was a drink that was called wink. I've never
yes.
heard of it, but
well,
anyway.
That was, yes, the wink, it was a Canada Dry beverage, and this I'm dating myself, but that's okay. And back in the mid-60s, the World's Fair was going on in New York, or, you know, in the boroughs mm-hmm. of New York, in Flushing Meadows, and Canada Dry had a pavilion there, and there was a group of us, it came through our, you know, the acting field, through looking for work. I mean, there are all sorts of little side things that you have to do when you're trying to build a resume in the theater and you're just getting started. But anyway, some of us were hired to just go and wear little costumes and pass out samples of this beverage called Wink. It was a grapefruit-flavored beverage that I think probably never caught on because nobody's ever heard of it. So I don't know whatever happened to Wink. But, I worked at the World's Fair and in the pavilion, the Canada Dry Pavilion, and just talked to people and told them how wonderful Wink was and suggested that they sample it, and that was my job for a while.
Well, what fun. But anyway, during the years you had, when you were 19, you got involved with somebody that really was not the quality of character that you thought they were, and your dad was a very, very negative person. And he called you damaged goods, that nobody would ever want you because you were damaged. And it's, I think in that time frame, that was often the kind of terminology that was used. It was like dating back to the days of Victorian times or, you know, just, it's medieval in its thinking.
Isn't that awful?
Yeah, it's really awful. But to say to someone, you're damaged goods, you'd never say that to a guy, but you'd say it to a girl.
Yep.
And it just is horribly devastating, and there are even some people that do that today.
Ugh.
Now, you ended up meeting a very, very fine man, Tim.
Yes, I did.
Mm-hmm. And he just seemed like a wonderful, wonderful person, and when you got to know his family, you found that there was a story about a baby, his baby brother, that had been born, that had died. And one of the things that you said to yourself was, how could this woman even keep her sanity after she had lost her baby son? This was her first child.
Yes.
And this was a very, very significant story. And when she was sharing this with you, she was sharing a phase of her life that, without your realizing it, you were going to mirror and then some.
Yes, that's right, which leads me to a point that I think I make in the book, or if I don't, it's an underlying theme that there is a pattern to our lives. Because when I met Tim's mother, Tim was the youngest of her eight children, the baby that died was the first, and he would have been nine, actually, the ninth child. So there were nine children, but eight lived into adulthood. And it was an accidental death when he was 18 months old. And the first time my husband took me to meet his family and to his hometown, she sat in the kitchen and told me this story. You know, and it was, tears came to her eyes. And at the time, my husband was in his 20s, I think he was 28, and his oldest brother would have been 50. You know, she had her childbearing years spanned a long period of time, but tears came to her eyes all that time, that all those many years after this event. And I just sat in awe of her, thinking, I just can't imagine that. I just cannot imagine a woman losing any child at all. You know, I was young and naive, and it just was incredible to me later as I thought about it and put the pieces together that this had happened to Tim and me ultimately.
As I said, there was a mirror that was being held up to you, really, with her being so open. And I just found this intriguing, the synchronicity of certain things that went on.
Yes.
That here you are, and here was this very open heart on the part of his mother sharing with you. To me, that's such trust, the fact that she would share that with you as a young person. And I think what she was wanting you to know is that you may not have a smooth ride. That life, many times, especially when she had as many children through as many years, it reminds me of my husband's mother. She had 10 children through 20 years. And he was the ninth of 10. And so this was fairly common at that time because many times children did not survive. So she was fortunate that out of the nine, that she had eight that lived into adulthood, because many, many children, even then, back in the 50s, died. Let's get on with you, because you had a beautiful baby girl.
Yes.
And
I did.
Her name was Heather. And she was just absolutely a fabulous, fabulous child.
But she
was afflicted with cystic fibrosis.
When was
that?
She was a special child. I'm sorry.
No.
When was
that diagnosed with her?
Actually, she was 8 months old when she was diagnosed. She was a very tiny child when she was born. Even though she was full term, she didn't weigh but about 5 pounds. And, you know, I thought, well, she's just a petite little person. But then when she was 8 months old, my pediatrician mentioned her failure to thrive. She was not gaining much weight. She was just a tiny little baby. And he actually, I don't know how much you want me to get into detail about cystic fibrosis, because it's not pretty in its manifestations. But he sent us to the hospital for a test that would determine the presence of cystic fibrosis, and the test was positive. So that was when she was 8 months old, and you know, our life changed radically and immediately. Of course, I hadn't been acting in the 8 months after she was born. Hadn't been doing any theater, although I did while I was pregnant with her. But then, you know, my whole life just began to focus on caring for her and keeping her as healthy as I possibly could.
And it's a lot of work, because it affects the respiratory and digestive parts of the body quite intensely. Now, you had her, and then she was how old when you had your daughter, Holly? She was, Heather, was it 3 when you had Holly?
No, she was 4 and a half. Four and a half years apart. So I decided that I just had to have a second child. I loved Heather so much that I had a lot of love to share. And there were people who felt that having another child was not a wise decision, but it was the right decision for Tim and me to make, and I've never had any regrets about it. But Holly was diagnosed at birth.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, at the time that Heather was diagnosed, very little was really known about cystic fibrosis in the medical community. I had never heard of it. Tim had never heard of it, but we certainly learned fast. Mm-hmm. And then when I became pregnant with the second child, Heather was almost four, and I actually had a doctor who suggested that I get an abortion. It was right about the time of Roe v. Wade, and if you're old enough to remember that, back in the 70s. And so he said to me, I live in a rather conservative part of the country, did then, and he said to me, well, we can't help you here, but I could give you the names of some doctors in Boston or Washington, D.C. who could help you. And whereas I certainly believe in choice, a woman's right to choose mm-hmm. her reproductive mm-hmm. options. Yeah. Absolutely. Would never, would support another woman if she decided to terminate the pregnancy. But for me, it wasn't an option. No.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I said, well, no, thank you anyway. I'm going to go ahead and go with this pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And she was diagnosed at birth for two reasons. Number one, they were aware that it was a possibility because both parents have to be carriers of the defective gene. And by the way, I wanted to mention that the possibility of a child having cystic fibrosis is 25% when both parents are carriers, which still left us with 75% possibility that the child would not have it. So we felt the odds were in our favor.
Mm-hmm.
But she was born with a condition called meconium ileus, in which the very early fecal matter of the newborn infant, which normally passes shortly after the delivery, was impacted in a section of her intestines called the ileum, and mm-hmm. her stomach was very distended, and that's a sure sign of cystic fibrosis, along with the fact that we had the genetic disposition for that.
Mm-hmm.
So then we had the two little girls, and they both had CF. So yes, life was a challenge. But
well, one of the things I found extremely interesting in your story, and of course there's a lot of details, we won't go into that, but you found that each one of your girls brought a gift to you, and Heather, the firstborn, told you at a certain point that she was going to die soon. And I've heard this story from more than one parent when they've had a child that's had a particular illness. It's as if they come in knowing they're going to have a short visit here.
Yeah.
And that's the way it was with Heather. And I found that the communication, the openness of communication between the two of you, you didn't shut her down. You didn't tell her. You listened to what she had to say. Not that you wanted to hear what she had to say, but you listened.
Yeah.
And it was real. And
yes,
she ended up passing away a short time later. She wasn't afraid, but she was really letting you know she wasn't going to be around very long.
That's right. Yes, she knew. You know, there's an old story. I don't know the origin of it. I refer to it in my book. And I came across this much later, actually, when I was writing the book. Someone told me it came out of the Jewish mystical tradition, and I'm not sure that that's true, but from whatever tradition it came, it's immaterial. I just think it's a beautiful little story, a metaphor. Anyway, in this myth, it is said that when the child is in utero, before she's born, an angel visits her or him and tells her what her mission on the light on this earth will be. And it's like a sacred contract.
Mm-hmm.
So that we are all born into on this earth plane knowing what our mission is. And then the angel puts his finger, whatever an angel is, on just below the nose to seal to seal the lips of the child, and so the child will forget, consciously forget, but always know it subconsciously. And that's why we have that little indentation between our nostrils and our upper lip, which is called the philtrum, because the angel has sealed our knowledge of what our sacred contract is by putting putting their finger there. And I just think that's a beautiful little story. And I think that Heather, when she was born, my husband and I both felt that she was an old, wise soul. Because here in this tiny little infant body, always she had these large, wise, vibrant eyes. I mean, they just looked like they were filled with wisdom. And she did know that she was going to die, and she did tell me. And she said, "What do you think it'll like? It will be like to be dead?" Mm-hmm. And I said, I said, "Well, you'll be with God. You'll be at perfect peace. You'll have no more pain." And that was all I said, because that was all I could think to say to my child, who was 11, 12. Well, I guess she was 11 at the time. But yes, Donna, you are right. She knew.
Mm-hmm. Now, Holly, after Heather passed, there was a very strong bond between yourself, your husband, and Holly. There was a deep understanding, and as you bring out, grief is handled individually by a person in their own way. Everybody's different, which is something that I think you eloquently address. But Holly ended up living until she was about 22.
Yes, she died when she was 22, so I had an extra decade with her. Mm-hmm. And you know, Donna, she told me she was going to die too, but not in the same way. Holly had her full life. I mean, she went to high school. She was participated in, here we have what's called the Governor's Magnet School for the Arts that serves kids in one central metropolitan area, serves kids that funnel in from the different jurisdictions, the different school districts. She did that. She had a boyfriend, so she had a, you know, she was an active teenager.
Mm-hmm.
And we always encouraged both of our children to be as active as they felt that they could be. We never tried to keep them as hothouse flowers, because Tim and I, neither one of us felt that that was the way they needed to live their lives. Because I remember when I was pregnant with Holly, my husband said, you know, if she has 7 full years, that's how many years she needs. And if you live 7 years or you live 97 years, you just need to live your life as fully as you possibly can, full out, and with as much joy as you can. But at any rate, she ended up living 22 years, but her last 2 or 3 years, cystic fibrosis is it's insidious and nasty, and it caught up with her, and finally she was... Her lungs were shutting down. Her pulmonary functions were very poor. She was on oxygen at home 24 hours a day, and she was listed for a bilateral lung transplant at the University of Virginia. I live in Virginia. So anyway, we were hoping, waiting for a lung transplant. And in my mind, in my heart, I saw her as having this transplant, having it successfully, and getting on with her life and going on to become a young woman with a career or a marriage or whatever she wanted to do. So we were actually, she was in the hospital up there in Charlottesville where the university is for another reason. She had to be hospitalized fairly frequently. And I was in a room with her. My husband was up there, and he was out in the patient in the family waiting room. And her pulmonologist came into the room and basically told us that she was, some lungs had become available, and they were going to do her lung transplant that night. And of course, we were all, so excited, and all the staff in the hospital were so excited because they had known her for several years. And as she was being wheeled on a gurney to the operating room, she suddenly sat up and said, "I need something to write on." Well, I was reading a book, and a paperback book, handed her a pencil and this book, and on the inside cover, she wrote, "I have to do it now. If this is right for me, if God and Heather and Grandma are with me, I'll be fine, wherever that place will be. And I had that little message from her inscribed forever. I mean, that I will always keep that book. And I realized that what she was telling me is that she was going to go and join her sister and her grandmother.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you had not only that, you had the fact that your husband committed suicide after so many years of dealing with the pain and the involvement with the children. It was a breaking point for him. And you said that he had let you know. He had actually told you what he was going to do, but there had been so much that both of you had gone through because of your children that you just thought he was talking, just to talk, but he wasn't.
That's right.
He did commit suicide. And then you have a statement in your book. You said there was an instant of clarity in which my soul understood my husband's freedom from unbearable pain. And then I began a long downward trip into the underworld. And you used the term dissociative amnesia, but that was something that in going through his funeral, there was something that you had to go through. Not only had you gone through two funerals with your beautiful girls, but then you had this. But each one seemed to bring you an insight into the value of life. And that was something that was very, very important to you. You have a very happy life now. You are married,
yes,
and you have got a wonderful, wonderful person as a partner and a companion.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
Yes,
amazing.
I do.
But see, you were open to life, and that's
yeah.
what I think is the value of your story, because I don't know of anybody that gets through life without being kicked in the teeth many times. And
that's right.
Every person
yeah.
that I consider successful, and this is my evaluation, has not only been kicked in the teeth more than once, mentally, physically, socially, you know, emotionally, spiritually, but they have managed to turn it around and use it as leverage. Has it been fun? No. But they had the choice. And they said, I've got to use it. And I think that's what makes your book, A Mosaic Heart, so very, very special. And I know that we're just about out of time, but your words are just absolutely wonderful in here. And I think instead of being a book that would be incredibly depressing, it's not that way at all. What you're saying is, this is my story, and this is what I went through, and this is how I made it. And I think that that's commendable, because many people would be afraid to tell their story. And I think, Terry, your story, A Mosaic Heart, is a very good one. Now, do you have a website people can go to?
I certainly do. It is www, of course, terryjonesbrady.com. It's Terry
okay.
spelled with a Y, and then there's a hyphen between the Jones and the Brady, but I think you could probably get to it without the hyphen. Anyway, terryjonesbrady.com, and the website tells a little of my story. I have some reviews of the book, and I have in there also the where people can buy my book, where it's available, which is one way is Amazon.com, of course, and then some other bookstores, or they can contact me and I can get the book to them. But I absolutely, if we have just a few minutes, I would just like to read you very briefly a note that I got, because what you say is so true that it sounds like it's going to be such a depressing story. A friend of mine wrote, I have just finished reading your lovely book. How beautifully you write. I anticipated that the story would be so sad and heavy, but I was very wrong. Sad moments, yes, but also many joyful ones. Such a moving tribute to Heather and Holly and to the resilience of love. Once I began reading, I couldn't put it down. Terry, it's truly a love story. So I just wanted to share that because I think that that is a very important aspect for people to know, that this is not a downer. This book is not just going to drag you down into horrible things that happen. And, you know, as you said, we get kicked in the teeth. If you live on this planet long enough, your heart's going to be broken probably several times.
Absolutely.
But just let the light in, let the love in.
And I agree. And Terry, it's very good. I'm going to quote from the play As You Like It, which you have in your epilogue in your book. Sweet are the uses of adversity, which, like the toad, ugly and venomous, wears yet a precious jewel in his head. And this hour, life exempt from public haunt, finds tongues in trees, books in the running brooks, sermons in stone, and good in everything. TerryJonesBrady.com is her website. It is a powerful book, and it is a book that will touch your heart, but also your spirit in a very, very special way. Terry Jones Brady, thank you so much for being my guest today. Go to TerryJonesBrady.com. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
It's time to get your glow on. March 2nd through 4th at the Northwest Women's Show, a show that's all about you. 400 exhibits, 5 entertainment stages, over 60 seminars, and best of all, shopping. New this year are special theme days with prizes. On Fitness Friday, wear your tennis shoes. Then stay for Girls Night Out from 5 till 8, packed with wild and crazy fun. The Fashion Police will be there on Stylin' Saturday. And let your glow shine on Spirit Sunday. Meet actress and author Linda Evans, Dave from Dave's Killer Bread and his rockin' band, and Hollywood numerologist Glynis McCants, plus fashion shows from JCPenney, favorite authors Anne and Leslie Rule, and back for all 3 days, Seattle's hottest firefighters. Northwest Women's Show, sponsored by Safeway, BECU, Constant Contact, and Como TV, at Century Link Event Center, March 2nd through 4th. The Northwest Women's Show, it's such a girl thing. Learn more at nwwomenshow.com.
Are you taking too many oral pain pills and concerned about the side effects? Are you having trouble getting to sleep at night because of the pain? Well, I'm Lou Paradise. I had the same problems you have, cured my pain, eliminated pain pills and their side effects by developing Toprasin, pain relief and healing cream. Toprasin relieves pain without the side effects. It doesn't burn, it doesn't smell, and it doesn't stain. But don't take my word for it. Doctors, pharmacists, and pain specialists are using and recommending Toprasin and ending the suffering for thousands of people just like you. We know you hurt. We want to help. We are so sure that Toprasin will work for you, we offer a money-back guarantee. So if you want the pain relief without the side effects, ask for Toprasin. Toprasin is available at Duane Reade, Quick Check Pharmacies, and Wegmans. Ask for Toprasin or call 1-800-959-1007 for a store near you. That's 1-800-959-1007. Toprasin, the last pain medicine you'll ever need, and you can sleep on that.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. And if you'd like to have your life brightened up with some insight, why don't you give me a call at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Stories like Terry Jones Brady shares. I, as a counselor for so many through the years, and all of our lives are touched in different ways, and I think when we can be open and we can share, as Terry has done, it can make a big difference in our life. We'll realize that we do have choices where many times we think we don't have them. So anyway, her book, A Mosaic Heart, is a real good thing, I think, to add to your library. Clutter. Oy vey. Here we are. It is springtime. Yes, springtime. Crocus are coming up through the ground. Flowers are beginning to show their little tiny buds, at least here in the Pacific Northwest they are. And you go, oh my goodness, and when the sun shines, your windows look like you really need to clean them, and you just go, oh my goodness. Spring cleaning is something maybe you're not quite ready for, but one of the things that often comes with spring cleaning is getting rid of clutter. And I think it's an ongoing job. I've never been able to find the end of a clutter accumulation, goodness gracious, with all the books I get and papers that I get and with the stuff for the show. I can have everything cleaned up, spick and span, week later, doesn't look like I did anything. It's just the way it is. It's an ongoing job. Well, I have some wonderful tips for you if you're in your garage and you're saying, wow, I want to clean out the garage. The kids have grown up. I want to do this. I want to do that. I want to do the other. Here are some wonderful ways of recycling your clutter that you might have. If you've got an old bike, or maybe it's not so old, but it's not being used, and you really don't know what to do with it, there is an organization called Bicycles for Humanity, Pat Montani. They collect these bikes, and they get the bikes to people that can use them, and they also teach them how to repair them. Now, this is what you do. You go to bicyclesforhumanity.org. Bicyclesforhumanity.org. Their phone number is 604-932-2939. They have 20 chapters nationwide. And if you don't find their group near you, then you can check out bikesfortheworld.org, and that's in Washington, D.C. There's bikesnotbombs.org in Boston. And in New Jersey, there's Pedals for Progress at p4p.org. And they're just wonderful groups. I think it's so terrific how Americans get these ideas and concepts, and they just say, let's do it. And they're out making a difference, not just for people in the U.S., but maybe also for people in different countries. Now, ladies, old bras. Oh, yes. Well, you think that they should just be thrown away? Well, there's an organization, Support 1000, that was started several years ago. They wanted to collect 1,000 bras, and since then, they have distributed 12,000 bras, including special mastectomy and nursing bras to needy women in shelters, job readiness programs, and others that are similar, both in the United States and overseas. So lots of times we don't think that someone may benefit from this, but there are people, women, that need them. So you can go to support1000, that's the number, 1000.org. That's support1000.org. I know with a women's show, which is coming up this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, there are so many programs locally where women can donate clothes for different shelters and things like this. So check these things out. You're going to find that there may be something right in your neighborhood that you could donate to that would benefit. Crayons. Lots of crayons. Would you believe that there's a crayon recycle program? Who would have thought this? I didn't know. Of course, I don't have little kids around. But the thing is, crayons can be recycled. Now, there is a crayon recycle program at Crazy Crayons employing people with developmental disabilities. They turn the old crayons into new ones. Do you know it has kept 75,000 plus pounds of crayons out of landfills? You don't have to sort them either. You just put them in a bag. Now, this is what you do. You visit crazycrayons.com or call 800-561-0922, and there are places you can drop these off. Is that cool? Or what? Mothers of the world with all those little bits of crayons, don't throw them away because it gives jobs to the disabled. Worn-out sneakers. Reuse a shoe. There's a program that Nike has put together. It's called Reuse a Shoe. It accepts sneakers of any brand and condition, recycles them into courts for various sports, and kids at home and around the world have a place to play because of this material. It's been going on for 22 years. They've recycled more than 25 million pairs of shoes. Where do you donate them? Go to a Nike store. Go check out NikeReuseAShoe.com. They'll tell you where the nearest Nike store is. Take in your own stinky shoes. Well, it might be nice if you washed them, but I don't think they care because it's all going to be processed, and they'll take those old shoes. I wish I'd known that because usually what I did, I just pitched my tennis shoes, put them in a recycle bin, thinking that they could be used. But think about that. That's a good thing to do. Old treadmill? Check out fitnessforcharity.com. There's a lot of people that use exercise equipment. They put them in schools, foster homes, churches, police and fire stations, hospitals, and so many other places. So there are a lot of sincere, hardworking people that have figured out a way where we just don't stick stuff in landfills. We're going to recycle them. and enable people that maybe otherwise would not be able to pay $2,000 for a brand new treadmill, be able to use them. Just think of that. It's a good thing. I believe it is. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you would like to chat. 888-627-6008 if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. Well, for the rest of this week, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Lou Paradise, who is going to be sharing medical information about pharmaceuticals. We're going to be talking about this, and Lou is very well educated. There's a lot of new information that has come out, and because he's very dedicated to helping people deal with pain, et cetera, he has to pretty much be up to par with it. So we're going to be going into detail about these points of information tomorrow. On Thursday, we're going to be talking about rethinking depression. Eric Meisel is going to be my guest. This is a whole different perspective regarding something that all of us get hit with every once in a while. I don't know of anybody that hasn't been depressed at one time or another, but it seems like it has become more and more the buzzword that we use for a lot of different things. Well, let's take charge of that. Let's see if we can rethink depression and how to work with it. Now, on Friday, because I am doing a women's forum at the Women's Show here in Seattle, Washington, we're going to be playing a Best of Donna. We're going to be replaying February 17th show, and this is a marvelous program. If you missed it, you want to hear it, and it's about leadership. It's just a real dynamic program. And we've got so many wonderful authors and people with backgrounds and experiences I know you're going to enjoy. I'm going to have all of this stuff posted this month. It'll be on time. So you're going to find that it's all going to be up shortly for you where you're going to be able to find out exactly what goes on. So check the BBS show information button every once in a while to find out what is coming up for this upcoming month of March. And again, Friday is the Women's Show, and I'm going to be presenting a forum. I have five dynamic Northwest experts that we're going to be having, telling their stories, sharing their information. It's everything from health to art. It's just absolutely dynamic. And also, I'm going to be there in booth 407 for the entire weekend. I'll be doing many sessions with people, and no appointments are necessary. And then on Sunday, I'm going to be talking about Spirit Talk. Also, on March the 24th, I'm going to be appearing at the Emerald Spiral Expo at the Kent Commons in Kent, Washington. That's going to be 9 to 5, and this is free to the public. I'll have a booth there, and both at the Women's Show as well as the Emerald Spiral, I'm going to have boo-coo books. I mean, all my library has to be purged because I review anywhere from 400 to 600 books a year. So you're going to have an opportunity to take some very, very special things home. So that's the lineup there. I know we're going to be taking a break in just a moment. And what I wanted to share with you was a poem that was written by my author's daughter, and I thought I would share it with you before we went on break. Heather, her firstborn, this was what she wrote, and it was titled After the Ballet. She twirls and points and pirouettes while you are spirit teardrops on wild honeysuckle. I see a pas de loup in celebration, but you are spirit's breath in sweet rustling leaves. Big eyes and pert little face, just like you. She's 13 now, just like you. Would be. You have freckles in heaven? Please, God, this frail, fragile creature, strong spirit, old soul, let her have strong legs, strong lungs, vibrant life, to dance in celebration. Under hot lights, she leaps and laughs, while you are a spirit's wings in a butterfly bush, a delicate, beautiful, bright luminescence, glowing throughout the garden glory. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a minute. Oh, I've got a neat Greek recipe for you, and I'll be sharing that with you, and a little bit of this and a little bit of that. So don't go away. We're going to be right back.
Have you ever had a friend tell you about a product they really believed in? Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Toprosin is a homeopathic cream that is just fabulous. I use it and my friends use it for relief of painful discomfort such as aching muscles and sore feet. odorless, non-greasy, it is a product that belongs in everyone's medicine cabinet and first aid kit. Check out www.toprisin.com, that's T-O-P-R-I-C-I-N, and find out more information. You can order Toprisin online or call 800-959-1007, that's 800-959-1007. Be sure to give them the code DS30 and you'll receive a 30% discount. Toprisin, non-toxic, safe for children too. This is a product that really works. Try it. I think you'll like it. Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Got that pad of paper and pen handy? How about a Greek recipe? I love Greek food. Well, this is chicken. Garlic and lemon rubbed. Really, really good things. Well, a trick I learned last year that for all of the cooking I've done, I wasn't aware of. If you want to tenderize chicken, and you can tenderize chicken, what did I know? By golly, and you want it moist, you can soak it in buttermilk. Very simple, old-fashioned country solution. Just put in a plastic bag with buttermilk. That's great. However, this is something that gives it an entirely different flavor and effectively is doing a tenderizing, but also adding this wonderful, wonderful lemony taste that is just very subtle. Now, this is what you're going to need. You're going to need a pound of chicken tenders. A pound of chicken tenders, that's equivalent to about 8 pieces. You're going to need, for dried seasoning, you're going to need a teaspoon of dried oregano, and you want to crumble that up between your hands real fine. You're going to need a teaspoon of ground cumin, a teaspoon of onion powder, a half a teaspoon of paprika, a quarter of a teaspoon of salt, and a pinch of cayenne pepper. If you like it a little bit spicier, make it a couple of pinches. Then you're going to, you know, you just need to mix all of those dry ingredients together. And then you have 3 tablespoons plus 2 teaspoons of freshly squeezed onion juice, lemon juice, excuse me. 3 tablespoons plus 2 teaspoons fresh lemon juice. Use the fresh. Don't use the bottle. Now, if you're desperate, you can use bottle, but you're not going to get anywhere near the flavor. You need 2 teaspoons of olive oil. You're going to need 1/3 cup of finely chopped peeled cucumber. 1/3 cup of that. 1/3 cup of fat-free plain yogurt. If you like Greek plain yogurt, have that. And then 3 tablespoons of fat-free sour cream and 2 teaspoons of chopped fresh dill and 1/8 teaspoon of pepper. Now, this is how simple it is. You take your chicken pieces and you put it in a glass bowl or a ceramic bowl. You don't put it in metal. You mix your oregano, your cumin, your onion powder, your paprika, your salt, and your cayenne. You want to sprinkle it over your chicken. And you just rub it into the chicken. You press it into the chicken. Then you take your 3 tablespoons of lemon juice, 2 minced cloves of garlic and oil, and mix those. Just takes you a split second to mix it, and then pour it over the chicken. And again, you want to rub it into the chicken. Now, you want then to cover that glass bowl
put the chicken in the refrigerator for 10 minutes. If you wanted the stronger flavor, you could leave it in there longer. It's not going to hurt anything. This is so fast and so quick. You're going to just position a broiler rack. The top of your chicken will be about 4 to 5 inches from your broiler unit. So you want to be sure that you have enough space. You want to line your baking sheet with foil. That saves on cleanup. And you can put cooking spray on there, or you could spray a rack. If you wanted to have your chicken up on a rack, you could do that. Now, your chicken, once you remove it from the marinade, you throw out any of the leftover marinade, and you put the chicken on your baking sheet. And in a separate bowl, you're going to take your cucumber, your yogurt, your sour cream, your dill, and your pepper, and the remaining 2 teaspoons of lemon juice and a little bit of salt, and you're going to mix that all together. Now, your chicken, you're going to broil. You're going to broil it 6 minutes, and, you know, it doesn't take any time at all for chicken tenders, but you want to make sure that they are done. And one side, 6 minutes, the next side, 2 minutes. Serve it with your cucumber sauce. The Greeks love cucumber. It is really, really good. And it's something that is light, and it's going to be light on the calories, but it's going to be absolutely wonderfully flavorful, some pizza bread, and, you know, just a nice salad with some feta cheese and a little bit of olive. Oh, it's great stuff. Great stuff. So anyway, I wanted to share that with you. Always like recipes. I like cooking. I don't have as much opportunity to cook as I would like. But it may be a good thing because I might never ever get out of the front door, especially when it comes to baking, because I usually like to eat what I cook unless I'm disastrously horrible when I'm fixing it. But that's very rare. So it's these are recipes that are very tasty, very light, and they really... And I'll just give you a change. I like Greek food anyway. Okay, I've got a story for you about a man who would not die. Now, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-627-6008. Now, this took place on March 2nd, 1784. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with this man's name, but I dare say you are. Ever heard of the Count of Saint Germain? Well, on that date, March 2nd, 1784, a fake burial was conducted for him, and this is a man who was absolutely, for most of his life, surrounded by intrigue, and there were all kinds of stories about him having magic powers. It was just, he was quite a guy. And he was a confidant of the French king, Louis XV, and Madame Pompadour, and then, also, he was a confidant for King Louis XVI and Marie Antoinette. It said he knew the secret of both the elixir of life, which gave eternal beauty, and the philosopher's stone, which gave eternal wealth. For over a century, he never appeared more than 50 years old and was extraordinarily wealthy. He was known by people as an alchemist, a secret agent, an artist, a linguist, a musician, a chemist, an inventor. He was a phenomenal conversationalist, and also he was a magician. Now, Saint Germain was part of a conspiracy that placed Catherine the Great upon Russia's throne. He was arrested in England as a spy, painted remarkable pictures of bejeweled figures, spoke nearly all of the European, Arabic, and Oriental languages, was accomplished in music as a violinist, pianist, and singer. He even created cosmetics and oil paint, dyeing cloth, curing leather, treating wood, turning flax into silk. Well, he ended up going to the Himalayas, Egypt, and Persia. He said he could turn diamonds, small ones, into a big one, make pearls grow to spectacular sizes. The legends about him said he could levitate, astral travel, teleport, walk through walls, influence people telepathically. And he had something, he had an affinity for snakes. He seemed to like to charm them. Now, apparently, according to legend, he was vegetarian, mostly oatmeal, never ate food in public. Jewels were always hidden in his clothing, and the value of the diamonds that he wore in his shoes and garters could support a small country. His final known residence was with Prince Charles of Hesse Castle. Some reports say he died in 1784. However, there are people that documented and said he was seen all over Europe and the Far East for another 100 years. Donna Sebo here. We're out of time. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Wherever you are, whatever you're doing, know that you are a light that lights up the world around you in its own special way. Keep it shining. We need all of you. See you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.